Howdy, my name is Kristen Hammonds. I'm a Master of Science student in the Entomology Department at Texas A&M University, and I'm studying the cotton fleahopper, specifically linking cotton fleahopper spring emergence to local environmental conditions. So Pseudotomacellus seriatus ruder is the cotton fleahopper. It is a murid, so it has piercing, sucking mouth parts. It is a Texan like myself, but found throughout the southern United States and northern Mexico. It has over 160 documented host plants across 35 families, and one of those includes cotton. So when the cotton fleahopper utilizes cotton as a host plant, it damages the squares. Pictured here is a blasted square. That is from the fleahopper feeding on the square, which causes it to turn black and abort. So cotton is susceptible the first 3 weeks of squaring. So timing and magnitude of infestation affects the degree of damage seen in a cotton field. So, and in 1999, it was considered the number one pest of U.S. cotton, and since then, it has been consistently one of the top pests of cotton in Texas and Oklahoma. So looking at the cotton fleahopper life cycle, like most murids, it starts off as an egg. It has five nymphal instars, each of which can be distinguished by its wing development or head capsule width, and then becomes an adult. Now, the cotton fleahopper is a multivoltine insect, which means it has multiple generations within a year. And depending on the timing of those generations in the year, they have different seasonal host plants. So when the fleahopper nymphs first emerge from diapausing eggs in the spring, they'll feed and develop on local host plants and then move to preferred host plants such as horse mint. The traditional dogma is that the cotton fleahopper will build and accumulate on numbers on horse mint, and then as it senesces, they'll move into cotton and have up to three generations there. Then in summer, when woolly croton begins to appear, they'll move into woolly croton and continue to reproduce. Woolly croton plays a key role in the cotton fleahopper life cycle in that it is a reproductive host, but more importantly, it is a host for their overwintering diapause eggs. So the cotton fleahopper will lay its eggs in the terminal portion of woolly croton, and as it senesces, this is where they will overwinter. So taking a closer look at diapausing eggs, this is a cross-section of a terminal portion of a croton plant, and here is one of the eggs. Its head is slightly protruding out of the croton stem. So diapause is induced by photoperiod, and this will begin around September, and most eggs laid after October 1st will be in diapause. So it is a state of suspended development, and this allows eggs to survive harsh winter conditions. And for nymphs to emerge in the spring, sufficient heat and moisture are required to break diapause. And this is an egg I was able to extract from a croton stem. So the objective of my study is to develop a model based on environmental parameters to predict spring emergence patterns of the cotton fleahopper. But for the purpose of today, I'm going to specifically talk about the data I've collected so far on spring emergence. So my study approach was to establish croton sites. This involved me driving around and scouting the Brazos River bottom for fields of croton that had a sufficient density that I could sample from for an entire year. And then after I've identified my sites, I took a sample from each one of them to first ensure that there were diapausing eggs, but then also to see if there were any differences in egg density from each of the fields. And then after all of that, in the spring, I began to take collections from these fields to record nymph emergence. So in the Brazos River bottom, I have three fields. Each of them are named after the producer. So on the left, we have Milazzo. On the top, we have DiStefano. And on the right, we have Peacock. And at each of these three fields, there are 10 local sites within the field to ensure there's an even sampling across the field. And at each of these research sites, I have permanent weather stations set up. And they are collecting local conditions such as temperature, precipitation, and relative humidity. Each of these play a key role in the spring emergence of the cotton fleahopper. So on January 19th, 2018, we made a collection of stems to assess the diapausing egg density. So we took 30 stems from each of the three sites, so three stems from each of the 10 plots within the site. These were held in an environmental chamber until we had time to process them. And dissecting them included cutting them up and peeling back the bark under a microscope, as seen on the right. And doing so, we were able to count the number of diapausing eggs. To collect spring emergence data, we started making weekly collections in January and continued to do so until May of 2018. And so our emergence containers are featured on the right. We would check these daily for 2 weeks to count nymphs. So the top and the bottom had been replaced with mesh to ensure good air circulation for the nymphs. And then there was a piece of cheesecloth put on top so that the nymphs could not emerge and escape. So we would remove the cheesecloth and then tap the can firmly on a counter to dislodge the nymphs from the croton and then count the live nymphs on a dark cloth. And on the left is some student workers taking some collections and cutting them to fit into the cans. And so by doing this, we were able to document initial peak and final emergence of the cotton flea hopper in the spring. Looking at the diapausing egg density, across the bottom, we have each of the three fields, and the top, or the y-axis, is the total number of eggs that were counted in our collections from each field. So in DiStefano, we had over 3,000 eggs, and Peacock, we had about 250. This information, as we expected, each field had its own unique density of diapausing eggs, but it was also useful when interpreting the spring emergence data. So there are a few things I want to point out about this emergence data. First, the x-axis, each date, represents a date of collection, and the y-axis is the total number of nymphs that emerged from that collection. Spring emergence initiated in February 13th, that collection, and terminated on May 29th. One thing to take note is that despite all of the, each field having its own density of diapausing eggs, they all had their peak emergence within a week of each other. And then the magnitude of peak emergence was related to the egg density from each field. So the field with the most number of diapausing eggs, DiStefano, also had the most nymphs to emerge, and the field with the least had the least to emerge. And then the last thing I want to point out is how the timing of peak emergence correlates to cotton phenology. So in the Brazos River bottom, cotton is typically planted the first week of April, and it germinates and continues to grow mid-April through May. We begin to see the development of squares mid-May. So if we take the data set from the previous slide and overlay it with this, we'll see that most nymphs will emerge the beginning of April. So this gives them all of the time that cotton is growing vegetatively to develop on local host plants, and then they become an adult when cotton is most susceptible, developing squares. So my conclusions are, although diapausing egg density varied across sites, timing of peak emergence was within the same week period, so between April 3rd and the April 10th collections. And based on the timing of peak nymph emergence and cotton development, adults arising from overwintered eggs could directly infest cotton. So in addition to flea hoppers emerging, developing on horse mint and local plants, and then infesting cotton, the timing shows that they can move directly into cotton. So they do not need another spring host to reproduce and accumulate numbers before infesting cotton. And my future directions are to take this spring emergence data and incorporate it with the weather data that I've been collecting this time, to where we can use temperature, precipitation, and relative humidity to estimate the date of peak nymph emergence. And for the next 2 years, we will be collecting additional data to expand the current data set and validate the accuracy of the model. And I would like to thank everybody that made this possible, my advisors Dr. Suh, Dr. Sword, and Dr. Chapel, and for Dr. Ryan Kurtz for the funding to allow us to do this project. And thank you all for your time. I'll take any questions.
We have plenty of time for questions.
Cool.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
All right.